who this is over here. So I have like his bio pulled up on here. You can see my technology. He is a professor of educational psychology with interest in human development, multimedia learning environments, and cross-cultural research. And he's exploring how internet can be used to create links among students and teachers inside and outside of school. So give a warm welcome to Professor Dixon.
Well, thank you all for being here and for helping eat the pizza that Stephanie has put together for you. And you saw she has a lot of giveaways as well as the pizza, and we may have a contest who can win the water bottle shortly. If we want to see who's here, we have Holly, Brian, Christopher, Arlene, Michael, Kristen, Andrew, Ryan, and my wife Robin over here, and Stephanie. This is not to dazzle you, but it's a quick way to find out who's here. If you had a large group, all this could go into a Wordle fly around crowd. But this really is actually helpful to me, because one of the things you always want to know is who you're talking to and why you're here. I'm used to talking to a lot of teachers, master's level teachers, doctoral students, and undergraduates in education. So this gives me a good chance to talk with a different audience. And I'm not going to talk your ears off for too long, but I'm going to say some things, and then I'll pause and ask you some other questions, and also want to see what kind of questions you have of me. So let me just go back to Stephanie asked me if I'd come talk about how technology is changing higher ed and what it means for undergraduates today. That's really something that weighs heavily on my mind a lot. And the message I'd like to give to you, and you probably already have it in a sense, is that the world is changing insanely fast. I mean, absolutely insanely fast. And is giving you tools beyond the dreaming of the richest person on the planet to educate yourself, to do creative things. If you go back 20 years ago, you go back to the library at Alexandria, we've never had a time when individuals have in their hands such incredible capacity to educate themselves. And yet our schools are having a hard time figuring out how to make sense out of it. The changes are coming so fast, and there's always the risk that we get distracted by all of that. So this application I was just using is one example. That's free. Anybody can use it. You could use it in your class, your study groups. You could put together one of these and go into class and offer it to the professor who might not know how to do it and say, hey, I'd like to take a quick quiz of the 200 people here today. That kind of instant interaction in part lies behind things like the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Arab Spring in the Middle East. The capacity of your generation this current time, be it your generation or whoever understands the tool, to organize their socially organize and meet and group is just unprecedented. It's like the whole globe is now spanned with a cortex of neurons that you can fire up and touch the planet. So this is the old guy part of me, but it'll connect it to the to your life and the iPad, I hope. When I was at the University of Wisconsin many years ago, we got the first Apple II ever and started looking at how preschoolers could work with an Apple II. And at the time, we worked like crazy to make it drive a video disc player. And on the elevator, I asked Stephanie what this was. She had never seen it. So I want you to, this is a training object, I want you to fondle this. This may be the only time in your life you get to touch one of these. And how many of you have seen a video disc? Where did you see a video disc?
It was in a church.
Uh-huh. Seen albums, but again, you know, those are the old black and white audio things parents have lying around the house, and you've all downloaded all your music from iTunes. In any event, the rate at which these tools have come along have really reached a kind of a recent culmination, in a sense, in the iPad. And, you know, I can't imitate, but whether it's the iPad or any of the other tablets, this is such an astonishing change from this. When I had my Apple II and it had to have a video disc player on the side and it had a thing to do speech synthesizing and all of that, it's almost as if by magic it has collapsed in on a platform. And I'd emphasize that clearly the Apple has done a very good job with it, but this is not just about Apple. It is about a profound change that's taking place. And I'll give you a little, those of you who are good with math and love calculus and stuff, probably never seen one of these either. You may have seen a 5 1/4 floppy when you were in school, right? And then came these. You may still remember these, but now those are gone, right? You just download your music onto your thing. If I were being super dramatic, I would line these up and say, go to your Excel spreadsheet and draw a curve of if the trend continues, what will it eventuate at? So that the big laser video disc drops down to something this size. This has more capacity than that big laser disc and so forth. Well, if you draw a curve, it reaches zero. The capacity to shrink things down such that if you run all these curves, it's not the size of a grain of salt. And that seems insane, but the technology, there's no horizon there that seems to get away from that. And, of course, when you have something like this, that can have, you know, 20,000 songs or 10,000 movies, or it can sing and dance. We really are in a world that's so vast it's almost beyond conception. But if you aren't thinking about the implications of that for your future, your learning here at MSU, the kinds of jobs you might pursue, the way you might pursue your passion, you really should. And I'll mention briefly Warren Buckleitner, a doctoral student of ours here, did his research over in the lab school with little kids working with children's software. He's made a life of reviewing children's software. And if you go home and Google 12-month-old baby using iPad, you will see a remarkable set of things, including this. Now, if that doesn't both worry you and intrigue you, then I'd be surprised. There are preschool teachers who say this is a nightmare, what's happening to our children. They ought to be out playing in a sandbox. There are people who love technology who think, "Ooh, I wish I'd had that when I was 12 months old. Where would I be now?" Whatever you think about it, these movement of technology and computers away from a computer center into microcomputers, what sat on desk, into laptops that you still dragged around like this one, to something like this. And what I want you to understand, there is absolutely nothing to make this not get smaller and smaller, except for the need to breed people with smaller fingertips and square eyeballs. But other than that, the technology is there for just continued. And the vastness is both a blessing and a blight, and in the sense of trying to figure out where do you position yourself with this. So there's me with my little kids now. They all went off to college and left me, and they're all living around in Seattle or Colorado. It started out in Montessori school, and Robin and I gave a little tribute to one of their kids' teachers and so on. Teachers do make a difference, so if any of you are thinking of teachers, if you think back over your 12 years of elementary school, I hope there's one teacher who really excited you, and the one that we honored last Friday night was this guy that when we moved, my little third grader walked into his classroom and his face just lighted up because Mr. Voigt at Glen Cairn had guinea pigs in aquariums, and I mean it looked like a jungle. I wanted to go so here's sort of a part of where I'm going with this. The shift to online learning is irreversible and it's accelerating. I saw a curve 2 weeks ago for the growth of online enrollment at Michigan State. And won't take time to bring it up, but it's like that. And there's an economist in the crowd, those of you who are marketing and business types. I said, "Byron, what's the curve that would fit that?" And he said, "It's almost perfectly logarithmic." which means exponential expansion, which means that whatever's happened in the last 5 years is going to happen even faster and faster and faster. Some of you have had some parts of courses online. You may have taken a course online completely. But you've got your 4 years on campus as an undergraduate. I'm just saying, whether you're thinking of the business world, your own career, thinking of the education that your children might get involved in the future, it is moving online at an astonishing rate. The growth of K-12 online is about 30% a year. And many of my colleagues in education say, what does that mean? Here is Emily Stone, who was in my undergraduate class in technology about 5 years ago. And she came up to me at a conference. And in that class, I said, you know, online learning is coming to K-12. And she came bounding up to me at a conference and said, remember when you talked in class about online was going to make a difference in K-12? And I said, yeah. She said, you know what I'm doing now? And I said, no. And she said, I'm teaching a fifth grade class completely online. I said, what? That's even beyond my thinking. And she had Connections Academy, which is one of these big companies that's moving into the education market, had her hugely equipped to interact with 30 families. 50 of them were Title I, and lower income kids, and 15 were others. And she went to work at 8 o'clock on Monday morning and taught a fifth grade class for the whole year. Now, that's mind-boggling, right? Wherever you're going, that sort of sense that things are accelerating, and it's not just higher ed, it's not just K-12, the baby, preschool baby I put up because it's dropping down there. But if you think about your career beyond MSU, when you move into the corporate world, move into finance, wherever you go, you will not come back to campus a lot, but you will do a lot online. And if you understand that and understand that it's important even while you're here to be thinking, how do you enhance what class, even if you go sit in a classroom face-to-face, be asking, what's the value of going to face-to-face class if the professor were to put the video up on the web? And I'm sort of curious how many of you have experiencing online courses as a part of your undergraduate work here. As one example, one of my colleagues realized that this is a stat course, but he has all his videos up online. So what do you do if your standard lectures are all online? People can learn them anytime they want to. I mean, look at them anytime they want to. He's done what's called flipping, and it's becoming popular up in high school. But things like watching the lecture, you do at home. When you come to class, you bring your homework assignments, your worksheets, or your discussion material. And so you use the face-to-face time for something other than a talking head like me to sit around and argue, discuss, and get help. So just in the last several years, the fact that things can be put up online are upsetting a lot of faculty like me. And in one of the units on campus, I know they got a lot of requests to have all the lectures up online. Then they discovered nobody would come to class. And then the faculty began to think, well, this isn't a good thing. They aren't coming to class to hear me say exactly what I'm saying on the video. So they've begun to rethink, you know, what's the purpose of going to class? Continue. I know this is not the most elegant use of PowerPoint, but I'm trying to skip over some things. As another example of that, I want you to know that I came here tonight from Washington, D.C., a seminar in Washington, D.C. Well, how could that possibly be? How could I fly up here from 5:30 and be here? Well, it was, of course, an online webinar, as they're called. So for an hour and a half, I heard these four entrepreneurs talking about how they are moving into the education business, offering competition, if you will, to the Michigan States of the world. And this book, EDU by Kaplan, basically says places like MSU are great if you can afford it, you know, big swimming pools and all the luxury that they imagine that we all have here. But for a lot of people, they can't afford to take 4 years off and go to campus. And so Kaplan, which was into the tutoring business a long time ago, is moving into starting online universities and online learning of all kinds. They'll be good, they'll be bad, they'll be crooks, there'll be successes. But the fact that I could, sitting at home, getting ready to come here, have the feeling of being in a room with four people who've written books or policymakers in this area saves vast amounts of time and money, which again, to bring it back to a really important piece of what I want you to think about is you can attend any conference on the planet now or learn as if you went without having to pay the airfare, the hotel rooms, and all of that. Now, undergraduates don't travel as much as graduate students do to conferences, but if you're thinking about your own education and your career, you'll be thinking, well, what is the professional organization that someone who's in the business want to go into, what do they go to every year? Because organization, I don't care if Wine Merchants of America or the Comic Book Makers of America or whatever, have annual conferences. So if I look back at what you said when you introduced yourself, if you're in finance or marketing or business or other areas, you ought to ask your, if you don't already know, you ought to ask your professors, you know, if I was really serious about my career in this field, what conference would you suggest I go to? And he might say, the American Association of Marketing, it meets in San Francisco next March. And you might say, well, that's all well and good, but I'm in class next March, and I don't have the money to fly to San Francisco. If you go find that organization online, in the last several years, almost all of them put up the video of the keynote speakers, the presentations, the PowerPoints, and handouts. And you can, in an hour or two, sitting there with your favorite beverage, connect with the cutting edge of your field. And it's as if you're there. The other piece of that I will encourage you to be thinking about, in your courses, your readings, be looking for some scholar or some writer or some poet or whatever that seems to be doing the kind of work you'd like to do or the thing that you find most interesting in the course you're taking. And Google those people, that name. Almost every author today has a website around their book. And if you go there, they often have videos talking about the book, free chapters of the book, and so forth. But what you need and what you, what I'm basically the message of tonight's talk is not what's out there, but it's what's here. Have you really thought about taking control of your own education by virtue of being very proactive and thoughtful and taking advantage of the resources that are out on the web? This did not exist 10 years ago in anything like the richness that it does today. And so that's really a big idea for you to, I hope, take away. Ask yourself, do you have in mind a sense of what you really want to do, where you want to be, what kind of job you're aiming for? And it's only out of that you can then begin to say, well, how do I strategize? Where do I go to look for connections? Here's an interesting little piece that I'll just throw up to intrigue you, perhaps. Michigan Virtual High School. Have you ever heard of... First, I guess you'd ask, have any of you done courses online when you were in K-12, high school, or whatever? I think there's something like 25, 30,000 students now doing online courses at Michigan Virtual School. It's 5 minutes from campus. It's located in the research park just across from the horse farm. Students in the Upper Peninsula, over in Nova, who are interested in a course that they can't get, like AP Physics or German or whatever, or algebra. Or if they're failed algebra in the ninth grade, they need to take it again. They can take it online instead of having to face the same teacher that they didn't like the first time through. And one of the intriguing things about online learning is Blackboard, or as they use, or Angel, as we use here, generates visual displays of when each student logs on and when the class as a whole logs on. Now, here in this class, that's sort of, let me drag that down a little bit. That's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, but then looking at it another way, what time of day did these students work? And a lot of these are ninth graders. That's midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you know, so they're You get students working all hours of the day. Now, compare that to when I went to high school and when you went to high school. You went to algebra 55-minute period, right? Bell rings, fire alarm goes off, you go to civics, then you go to chemistry or whatever. You would go home with your book, maybe do algebra homework. The teacher didn't know what you were doing and when. You could not have access to rich video, visuals, problem sets online. So, again, part of my message is, as you think about your learning here at MSU, think about your time. Where do you, because time ultimately spent on almost anything would improve your performance in that. Find out what you really want to do, but be thinking about monitoring your time. Again, technology is going to play a bit in that. My wife is trying to keep me fit. And some of you in marketing or business may want to be end up marketing things like that. But if you push that little button, it'll tell you how many steps I've taken or how many flights of stairs I've gone up. And I plug that thing into the computer, and it draws charts over time of how much exercise I'm getting. Well, that's a realm that's opening up of, in psychology it's called behavioral self-regulation, but it basically means how do you keep yourself on a diet or an exercise plan or study plan or whatever. Search sort of suggests any data, if you gather something, it will change the way you do it. So if you start writing down how many steps you took or how many miles you ran this day, it encourages you to keep doing that kind of thing. Again, we're going to begin to see more and more education systems where you might enroll in a class, and I can only see this happening online. You've got a group of 200 students in a classroom, you can't know exactly how they're spending their time. And some display like this one, fed back to a student, could say something like, you know, you're not doing any studying on the weekend. You want to think that over? And then you could write back and say, well, you remember it was the football. It was the homecoming weekend. Say, okay, well, what about next weekend? So we're going to see these worlds of learning that can track where you are if you want them to, can track what your feedback on whether you are spending enough time or not. An example of this, I'd also mention Robin is the first person to finish in the online master's that we have in the College of Education, going back, is it 8 years now, 9, 10? We started an online master's about 12 years ago. And at the time, the faculty had a huge debate. Would anybody ever take an online course? Or would it be as good as face-to-face? Or how could I teach online? I don't know how to teach online, and so forth and so on. It became the fastest growing program in the country. Robin was the first student through, then went on to do her PhD at University of Virginia. And then after she finished her PhD, then we sort of got reconnected her. So decided to get married after that. Anybody could do all those things. So, but her PhD is in gifted and talented, where they do a lot of thinking about how do you, in a classroom, individualize. And even this talk right now, I look out there and you're in different areas. Whatever I'm saying is connecting in different ways. The world we could create and will create with things like this is you go to school, and instead of sitting in a class where either you feel like you're so far behind you'll never catch up, or it's a subject that bores you to tears, or because you already know that stuff, with the kind of things that are coming online now and coming onto platforms like this, there's no reason why large groups of people need to be sitting and hearing the same verbal stream like I'm giving to you, doing the same problem set. But as teachers, we've never been able to really sit down as we might if we had one-on-one tutorials. And therefore, we move our people through K-12, we move them through MSU, trying as teachers to hit sort of the sweet spot in the middle, not so far ahead that everybody falls behind, not so far behind what people know that they're bored to death. But as long as you're working in large groups and you don't have this kind of feedback directly to the student, like this Fitbit that was passing around, or like those visual displays of time. See, a teacher who knew on average how her class was doing could think, well, maybe I ought to do more assignments for the weekend. The individual student who would get some feedback saying, you know, you're falling behind in algebra, but if you spend 3 hours doing this module next weekend, I think it'll catch you up. And what will ultimately happen is that this advice giving will be given by the computer, because a teacher can't actually process 200 visual graphs and give individual feedback the way one would love to do if one had the chance. So that's basically another example of where the school systems we have can't keep up with the rate of change, and they can't accommodate the diversity of learners. The world that's coming and is aborning all around us enables that, and I hope that you all sort of pick up on this. Steve Jobs, of course, a hero of mine, and as you all know, died recently. If you want a little inspiration, just Google Steve Jobs Stanford commencement address in 2005, and it's very moving. It's a 15-minute talk, and at the time he was hoping he wasn't dying, and in the end he did. But he makes that point to love what you do, and that's part of what I'd like to also in this talk. Much education from kindergarten sort of tells us, here's what you need to know, algebra, and here the middle, you're a B student on algebra. Are you really good at algebra? Maybe you should be an engineer. Schools don't say enough of saying, what do you really love to do? What will you put on this planet to become? And I'll ask you in a minute or two, or before I'm over, I hope, before we run out of time, to think about that, because suppose you were a kid 30 years ago living in the UP or living in inner city or living right here in East Lansing, and you really loved something. Now, you can fill that in with anything. I was a little science nut and had a chemistry lab. I also loved to collect insects. Some of you may like to write poetry. Some of you may be, building microcomputers in your basement. Who knows? But the system from the time forward has rarely, I think, done an adequate job of saying to each learner, what would really excite you? And by that, I don't mean there's an excitement of watching a great movie, but that's a receptive excitement or passion. What is your passion for making something? Writing poetry, doing photography, being a scientist, being an engineer, designing an Excel spreadsheet that does crazy things with graphs. If you can find that, it helps to have a career in mind, because we all need to get a job, right? Steve Jobs' point is it's better to start with what you love to do, because if you love to do it, you'll spend a lot of time and you'll probably succeed economically, unless it's something I like to. Well, I started to say it's like I like to do paintball fighting. Well, you may be going and start a paintball company if you like paintball, or make a better paintball device. So point here is, much like at the professional level, I would say you can attend a conference for any organization that might be the career you want to be. If there's an author you like, you can go to that author's website, click, and you'll hear the author reading his own or her own writings. If you like to write poetry, you can publish your poetry online and hear poetry online and so forth. The trick is, what do you want to do? And I always loved Steve Jobs' quote. He hired John Sculley away from Pepsi. It turned out to be a terrible idea, but he persuaded Sculley to come to Apple by saying, do you want to sell sugar water the rest of your life, or you want to come with me and change the world? My suggestion to you is, how do you want to change the world, or at least have a good job? I promised Stephanie we'd have a little quiz, because so we can see who could win one of these water bottles. So another reason why it is so important for you to try very hard in this swirly sea of change to keep looking inward and say, what do I really want to do? Where do I want to spend my time to do, make myself economically productive, but creatively? And the problem there is the range of choices is so vast it almost blows you away. So here's the quiz question, and the person who comes closest, it's a math problem, but the person who comes closest wins one of these. Is that right, Stephanie?
Yeah, sure.
All right. And here's the quiz question. It's coming up. So on the App Store, oops, I'm giving away the answer. I've got to back up. If you're a quick reader, you already know the answer, so that gives you a little advantage. if I hired you and I said, there are 500,000 apps, I don't have time to look at them, I want you to go through them and tell me which ones are really good. And all you got to do is rank them on a scale of 1 to 10. And I'm going to pay you, and you can only spend 1 minute per app, and I want you to work 40-hour week, 8 hours a day, you know, 5 days a week, and work 50 weeks a year. How long would it take you to look once at each of the 500,000 apps?
5 years.
He guesses 5 years. I hear 5 years. How many could do this with an Excel spreadsheet? Must be some business majors in here who could do that. 5 years? Oh, that's the good strategy. He's played a lot of poker in his day. What do you guess?
4.3 years.
Oh, you were close. I mean, getting closer. Well, we've got three guesses, and the. But we'll have another question then in a minute. And so I think out, 3 out of 5 responding, 1 chewing pizza in the back, unable to speak. Another pizza in the back there. The answer is, moving right along, it would take you 4 years plus 220,000. But he sneaked in underneath you using the strategy of that person on the side next to him. So the next question turns out, suppose you have apps. Now this one. Think about this. First, well, let's start with the first question. How many humans are there thought to be on the planet right now?
7 billion.
Okay. Yeah, we just reached 7 billion. And one of these 500,000. And all 7 billion people, babies and old people, spread evenly across 1,000 apps. How much money would you make? I thought we had some business finance majors. Let me look back at this list. Wait a minute.
We don't know how to do it.
What? Oh my! I thought there would be whiz kids here popping out of their iPhone. Yeah, it's a reasonable question. You've written an app. You want to get rich. They only sell for about $1 because there's some, you know, a lot of them out there. And so they're 500,000 in your head. Divide 500,000 into 7 billion. What do you get? 14,000. We have a winner. We have another winner. So if every one of those apps sold equal number to all 7 billion of us, the person who wrote it would get. $14,000. Now, if you've worked to write an app, spent 3 years writing an app, and you only get $14,000, that's not very good income. So you've got to hope that yours is more popular than others, right? Well, that's the world we're in, that there's an abundance of good stuff out there, sort of beyond human dreaming. It opens up, if you can filter through all the stuff or find the sweet spot for your interest, then you can do a lot of cool things. Let me bring up some questions if I can get a poll. And I won't take time to have you whip out your phones, but let me just throw up some questions and we'll at this level. Let's see. Someone back there wolfing down all the pizza, not paying attention, but. How many of you, just judge, hold up your hand. How many of you have a Facebook page? All right, 100%, yes. Next question. Is, check your Facebook page. Choices. Many times a day, 3 or 4 times a day, once a day, or once a week. Let's start at the bottom. How many check it only once a week? How about a day? Oh, they must not be very interested in Facebook. Well, how about 3 or 4 times a day? The two mature undergraduates say that they do. How about many times a day? Okay. Why does one check one's Facebook so often? And if you used your Fitbit and it reminded you how many times you're checking, would that be a good thing to put on your resume? Job, seeking job in X, qualifications, checked Facebook 23 times a day on average, according to my visual display. See my Excel spreadsheet. Tried to check more, but MSU classes got in my way. You know, that'd be a strong statement. That'd get you somewhere. I have a Facebook page. I check it maybe once or twice a week. I can't figure out why all these people want to be my friends that I don't even know. Many of them with Russian names and all. Now here's, so you're sort of loosening your arms now. Let's go to the next. I should ask first of all what an e-portfolio is, an electronic portfolio, a web portfolio. How many of you have a web portfolio? Not many hands went up. I saw one in the back there. What I found in the undergraduate class I teach, I've got 50 students in a course where we're learning to use technology, and really I push them to create a portfolio on the web. And what I would say to each of you, it's a portfolio. I mean, you have the potential of putting things up, but mostly what you put up is not, it's social, enjoyable, but is rarely what would help you advance your intellectual development or your career in the most direct ways. And the looters we have around here is just, you have to watch constantly, you know. Seriously, I'm very passionate about this idea that if you took just a weekend, or not even a weekend, a day, one Saturday, 4 hours, you can teach yourself with Google Sites or with Weebly or any of these free tools to create a professional presence on the web, distinct from Facebook, but where you would begin to put up your accomplishments, your resume, begin building a resume, begin building a statement of who you are, the kind of job you're looking for. That proactive, now you notice it from to the web and attend conferences. You can find things in the newspaper like the New York Times that's sponsoring this evening event. And you can educate yourself. But the question is, what will you have to show when you graduate? And that brings me to my next little question. All right, now I want you to think really hard about this one. What is the piece of work you have done at MSU that you're proudest of? And is there any residue of that? Is there any artifact? Is there anything, a term paper, or a science study, a organization of, like Stephanie could put her work organizing something like this. But when I originally framed this question, I was thinking of the work you've done in a course at MSU or even in senior year of high school that you're proud of. So that was going to be an open-ended, a text question, but by the time we texted this in, I was afraid it would take too long. So answer that question for me. And let me pace around a little bit. Think about that. If I said, bring me in the best paper you've ever written, bring me in a project or something, what would that be?
My civil engineering class freshman year, we had a semester-long project of designing a college to go into Petoskey, Michigan. and so we had to present all different aspects of how the college would fit into the community surrounding it. So I really feel proud of the accomplishments that we were able to think of that.
Did you do that as a group, or did you do...
Yeah, it was a four-person group.
Uh-huh. And did you make a poster presentation or a...
Yeah, I did the whole layout on AutoCAD, and I printed it out on...
And if you wanted to show it to us tonight, where would it be?
It's in my room at home.
Okay.
I have the whole like slideshow printed out. I have our presentation printed out, and I have all of the designs that I made.
Okay. I'll come back to that. What about you? If we asked you to go to your closet or go home, or what would you bring in?
My human resources class, it's like the same type of thing, a semester-long project. And you create a company, and throughout the course, as you learn different aspects of human resources, you show how they are incorporated into your company and which ones you choose and why you choose when you make presentations every other week. And then the end of the course is just where we're at right now. We have to make a 10-minute-long video on the company that we have to do and kind of explain like the whole, give it like a whole overview of it, kind of show, like make it personal and, you know, kind of that kind of stuff. And so we actually just finished our video on Monday. So, I mean, it took us like 10 hours to edit and it took us like 4 hours to film. So just a lot of, it was a lot of cooperating with these people that, you know, don't know, we're all extremely different, but just incorporating a lot of aspects of teamwork with knowledge and technology, just coming together and producing a really good end result.
And you?
Last year, for my WRA class, I had to write a 10-page paper about what you wanted to do, and, like, I'm a working partner. And it was hard for me because I didn't know, so I, like, did a lot of research and ended up.
And where is the paper now?
It's on my computer, so okay.
Has anyone read it since last year, other than maybe you?
No.
Okay. All right.
Last semester, I was in an organization that was consulting for nonprofit organizations, and we actually had a client, and so the whole semester we would be with them, and we had meetings every week where we would basically just try and help them. It was a theater, and they wanted to increase their sales, so we actually had to deliver at the end of the semester.
What was the deliverable?
It was like an hour and a half long presentation just on what, like, all their marketing and advertising strategies, and us kind of telling them how we thought they could improve.
Did you use PowerPoint or something like that?
Yeah, that was all PowerPoint. Okay. Well, it was Excel as well that we had incorporated on there. We attached, there are a lot of attachments with it. We actually ended up giving them like a over 100 page booklet on a lot of instructions that they could show.
Okay.
I did a service learning project for a semester on urban education. And at the end, I wrote a huge paper on how it ties into all the stuff we learned in the course. Which was, something I'm really proud of.
Have you finished eating your pizza? So you're welcome to come up here if you want to, but...
be a lot of moving.
Was there something... piece of work you're proud of that you think you...
Well, it isn't actually done yet, but the thesis that I already got partially complete in my head, which is also like the thesis / political tree ties, which may actually help out this country.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you to put your head up on the web, but coming back around to what you've just described as really valuable work, I want to say two things about it. One, it was valuable to you, and in various ways, what you described was something that was, in some cases, working as a group, but a large chunk, and you could really get into it, and it was more than just taking a short quiz or a final exam, multiple choice or whatever. There's a psychologist who talks about flow, Csikszentmihalyi, says that what's missing in a lot of education is you don't get into what he calls the flow experience, and often that is working with a group, like in high school, putting on a play or working with a band or something like that. And that people, when they look back over their lives, it's those big chunks, I took 10 item multiple choice tests. Nobody remembers that, but they do remember these larger pieces. What I would like to sort of say to you is that if you've got that kind of work, it's great. If it is only sitting in your closet, no one has seen it, you've not harvested, you've put in hours of work, right? Sometime in the next several years, you're going to graduate from MSU. And often people will graduate, and when they go out on the job market, they'll put together a resume, but they have what I say, call it nothing to show for it. Someone says to me, what have you got to show for your education at MSU? And you say, well, I've got a 3.2 or whatever. What I'm saying to you is you've got, each of you has good work. And I have to comment, when I've asked this question of a lot of undergraduates, they can't think of a thing that they, as substantial as what you've described. So already it suggests that you're perhaps thinking farther ahead and more serious about your studies than some of your colleagues. But I've been pushing this idea of portfolios for over a decade, and I could show you some portfolios of these students in 416, the class I teach. Almost none of them I think 2 out of 50 had a portfolio when they started. Going out and using Weebly, which you can look up, which is easy, or Google Sites, you can, in a very short time, create just a welcoming page, say, hi, I'm whoever you are. I'm a such and such at Michigan State. I'm working towards a degree in. I'm hoping to find a job such and such. Click here to see a piece of my work. Each of you could put up a terrific thing. It'd be very easy. And you could write a little bit about it. This is one of the things I'm proudest of at MSU so far, is we did this major class project and it resulted in this, or we benefited a nonprofit group or whatever. That will do two things. The pragmatic is when you go graduate from here and apply to graduate school or decide to go on the job market, you will have something to show for your education. And you'll have something to start a conversation with. And I can tell you, people are looking for people who are sort of starters, who are leaders, and who do projects like that. It would not, really, for each of the ones you've described, you could have up in 4 hours. You could go home tonight and by midnight have created a page, uploaded using Google Sites and so forth. So there's the pragmatic that you want to get to. What I have found in doing this with lots of people in portfolios, one, I used to think that what would happen was you know who you are and you just want to show it on the web. But what happens when you start trying to craft an e-portfolio, or you might call it a web presence other than Facebook, where you try to put forth sort of the richly textured, serious representation of who you are, or career-oriented, what happens when you start trying to externalize what you want to be, like that 10-page paper you wrote, what do you want to be? That was your first attempt, or an attempt, right? You create this page and say that in such and such class we had to try to write about, here's what I wrote in spring of whenever. And you keep it up there. As long as you never put anything on the web you don't want people to see. But you begin to think, well, what can I add to my resume, for example? If you say, maybe I'll volunteer at a summer camp, or maybe I'll take a job with something. So you begin to build what's a portfolio, so that when you, there are two things I'm saying. One, it will help you when you graduate to show it, to get an entree into a job interview. But to me, the most profoundly interesting part, and it comes back around to what I began with, you're living in a world where you will learn the rest of your life, because the world is going to change. You won't finish MSU, never have to go back to school. That learning will take place online. All of the resources are out there for you to do it. You don't have to wait for someone to sign you up for a workshop. You can create your own. But you also can begin to market yourself. And that sounds so crass that I want to emphasize, it's coming back to Steve Jobs' quote. If you create a representation of yourself, showing that you do good work, you know how to write, you know how to work in groups, you're searching as to who you are, you write well. The act of doing that is an externalization of who you are now and who you want to become. And from that, you can begin to build these connections with other sources to learn. So that may be too preachy, but I would love to take each of you to the computer lab right now and say, okay, open up Google Sites, go sites.google.com, make your first page, and now before midnight, upload the projects you've just described. And If it took you 10 hours to edit a video, for goodness sake, at least have it attached to your resume by this weekend so that people can see it. The thing I found that school, and this is my deep structure critique of K-12 and it's critique of higher ed as well, people, students write papers, give paper to professor. Professor or TA writes on it, gives a grade, gives back. Paper is either discarded or put in a file cabinet. When you move, it's thrown away. You ought to be writing for the world, and you ought to be putting your, using the power of the web to shift it from I'm writing a paper for a course to I've written this paper and I'm darn proud of it, and I want you to want to show you why I'm proud of it. Now, I'm not saying every paper you do has to be like that, but to the degree when you graduate, you have three or four things that you can say, this is the quality of work I'm capable of, and have it on the web, so with the put the link on your business card, you're going to be way ahead of a lot of people in sort of thinking about who you are and what you want to become. Well, that's probably enough of me for now. Stephanie, there's still some pizza back there, but let me open it up for questions or suggest if, you know, feel free if you need to run or go get more pizza. But
yeah, just make sure you have some pizza in the back. The reason that New York Times like sponsored this, I chose this event because of an article in the New York Times about how schools are changing to technology instead of like textbooks and stuff, and that was in a middle school in Indiana, and that was what the article was about. So that was kind of the basis of this, but there's a bunch of freebies from New York Times, and if you guys can give a round of applause for Professor Dickens.
Thank you.